Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to the special edition of Football Garbage Time Podcast, NFL Playoffs and Super Bowl Edition. My name is Hudson Wong, and I'm here with Football Garbage Time senior staff writer Ryan Whitfield. Ryan, so tell me, how are you doing? Have you recovered from the weekend?
Yeah. Slowly but surely.
Okay, and by the way, I was talking about the Patriots, not the huge storm that hit all over the East Coast, because I assumed that the storm meant nothing to you this weekend as compared to the AFC Conference Championship.
Meant nothing so, other than that if the Pats had taken care of business, Peyton Manning would have been playing here in about 30-degree weather on Sunday, but you know,
right.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that's true. So before we get started, again, I want to give a shout-out to Wally and Ray of Urban Sports Scene in the DMV. They've been going head-to-head with us all season long, and with the conference championship week, we actually lost to them because we picked the Pats to win, and they didn't. They picked the Broncos. So we're tied up again, 3-3-2. We're going to continue going heads-up. Now on the Super Bowl, keep checking them out on podbean.com. They're terrific. Give them a listen. So on to our main topics of the day, the NFL Conference Championships, which we're going to talk about in both of them, the NFC and the AFC. And the Super Bowl, just a little mini preview, and then a couple of things about the Pro Bowl coming up this weekend, as that will be the only pro football that will be on until the Super Bowl airs on February 7th. So first of all, the AFC Championship game between the New England Patriots and the Denver Broncos. So on Sunday, the Patriots rolled into Denver as three-point favorites, but ended up losing an incredibly close game, which came down to a two-point conversion. Some say it might have come down to a point after attempt. And they lost to the Broncos 20-18. I know that was soul-crushing for you, Ryan. So why don't you take a first crack at this? What did you learn from this game? What are your takeaways from this game? How do you think the Broncos are going to fare going forward? And what do you think this does to the Patriots organization?
Oh, man. so many different avenues to go down here for me. I'll first and foremost say probably the one thing that all of our listeners will won't believe is about to come out of my mouth, but you know, I think this was a huge legacy shifting game, and I mean that in the fact that Peyton Manning, for all his woes early in his career, is going to finish in the playoffs with a winning record against Brady. And in this series, in the playoffs, only the home team has ever won this matchup. So what that really says to me is that it shifts the, you know, I will still, and you know, the national media, the national fan base, and everyone who hates the Patriots and hates Tom Brady, will always try to pump up Peyton to more than what he was. I think from a logical standpoint, it's long over that Brady is the better quarterback. And when it's all said and done, Brady will probably have another ring and will probably cement himself as the greatest single player in the league to ever play. With that said, though, Peyton shifted the dynamic now to more of a Magic Bird, kind of comparison, whereas even though Brady had the better of him, Manning proved himself now to be a worthy opponent, which he didn't early in his career. And I don't think this game was a lot about him, but at the end of the day, you can't say in the beginning that the quarterbacks get the wins and the losses, and then just because he's more of a backseat now that it doesn't count, because it does count. And with that said, I think he deserves to win a second Super Bowl. So I'm actually rooting for Denver now. As far as breaking down the game, and I'll go quickly, but you can say, it's easy to blame Gostkowski, but this stuff always happens in Denver. It is a house of horrors for New England. Brady's 2-7 there in his career. It's always weird stuff going on. It was one of those games that the minute – the Patriots had anything going, there was a mistake immediately after. There was the Amendola punt return. I believe it was before they scored the touchdown, a couple drives before. He gets a nice punt return, and then Brian Stork is out there, you know, headbutting people after the play. Didn't want to hit anybody between the whistles all day Sunday, but after the play now he's going to be a tough guy and start headbutting people. So,
right.
You know, I think there's some – the offensive line needs a massive overhaul, and that's – and that's the first place they need to start. Steven Gostkowski's an all-time kicker. Brian Stork I don't know if you guys have caught wind of his media interview yesterday. He's kind of a dink. He didn't play that well this year, and then he cost them big in that game on Sunday. So I'm fine if they move on from him. Marcus Cannon should have never been given an extension. It's a joke that he was, and that's on Belichick. And at the end of the year, they did have to play for health, so I don't blame the Miami game. I blame the stupid mortar kick in the Philadelphia game. If they had just taken care of business in either one of those games against Denver or Philly where they were up 14 points, and people go back and blame Chris Harper for that fumbled punt in Denver, you had Keyshawn Martin on your bench, and Keyshawn Martin was a return guy in Houston. That's what his job was the first 2 years in the league. So why he's not out there in the snow returning punts as opposed to Chris Harper. So there was a lot of arrogance down the stretch, a lot of mistakes. And, the last thing I'll say is that, and it's the most frustrating thing for a Patriots fan, and I don't know if you guys ever pick up on this, but there are two Tom Bradys. There's the Tom Brady who is in your face, headbutting, grabbing McDaniels and screaming on the sideline. There's the really intense, fiery Tom Brady. And then there's the Brady that's kind of mopey. And every once in a while, that's usually in the regular season we see him, but every once in a while he comes out in a playoff game, and he was out in full force Sunday. I know he can't block for himself, but at some point he can go as the 15-year veteran, the leader, and the all-time greatest player on this team and probably in the league ever. He can go get in the offensive line huddle and on the sideline and get in their faces and get them fired up, headbutt some people, get some people going. And there are games he'll do that, and then there are games that he'll just sit on the bench with Josh McDaniels with his legs crossed and his hands between his legs looking like he just lost his puppy. So, Pats deserve to lose the game. I still don't, think that Denver's defense is as good as it looked, but, Von Miller finally shut me up, so he gets his credit.
Wow. Wow, amazing. This is a groundbreaking experience here. You're actually being critical of Tom Brady. What's going on here? This is like a shift here. I'm actually just joking with you, but let me ask you this question. What about Belichick's decision to forego the short field goal attempts twice in the fourth quarter and go for it from the fourth down? I mean, how do you feel about those decisions?
Yeah, it's kind of the rhetoric that's taken on after the game, and I love the, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I love when people do this. The extra point and the going for and fourth down now is the big storylines. And, again, not how poorly constructed this offensive line was, the fact that they couldn't run the ball for more than a yard, and that's coming from somebody who doesn't even believe in the run. And that they didn't have a real outside receiver. Brandon LaFell-Barrow played the game. That going for it on fourth down, I mean, if anybody in their right minds at 6 minutes left in that game really believed that the Patriots were going to be able to drive the ball down twice more when they hadn't moved the ball all game, then they should have been calling Vegas for a quick prop bet in the middle of that game and cashed in big. So that's a long way of me saying that I think you're a liar. The Patriots hadn't moved the ball all game. There's 6 minutes left. You have no idea if you're going to get that ball back. And even if you do, you hadn't proven that you could drive it all day. So when you're in that situation, yeah, in the end, that field goal would have been the difference. But at that point in the game, 6 minutes left, your season on the line, you're finally in red zone territory. You have to go for the touchdown there.
Yeah, and this is what I have to say about this, because I'm no huge Belichick fan, but I do respect the guy as one of the best coaches ever in the NFL. And I can't say that putting myself in that situation. I mean, they discussed this. This wasn't a gut call. This is something they had discussed and thought about. It was good defense that stopped them from converting. It wasn't a poorly designed play. It wasn't a poorly designed decision. So I'm kind of on board here that I don't want to second guess that. And I certainly do not want to second guess Gostkowski. I mean, he has not missed an extra point since 2006. I mean, the guy hasn't missed. He's automatic for extra points and for field goals for a great part of his career, but for extra points for a decade. And the fact that he missed one here, I mean, that should not be the storyline. I mean, he did hit other field goals along the way. So I don't think it's any one person's fault. And then, quite frankly, Tom Brady, and again, I'm not a huge fan, obviously, outside of being respecting him as being one of the best quarterbacks of all time. But, he still has more playoff wins than any other quarterback in league history, and he still holds the career postseason records for completed passes, passing touchdowns, game-winning drives. The list goes on and on and on. He's just another person in the postseason, and he wasn't that person this last Sunday. And I think that might be your fiery Tom Brady versus mopey Tom Brady, but that's what I kind of saw. I didn't see that guy who we've seen so many times with the ball just kind of being unstoppable in these precarious situations until the very end of that game. Until the very end of that game, that last drive when he got the ball and basically it was like do or die, I at that point had no doubt he was going to score a touchdown. Now, whether they're going to get the two-point conversion or not, I don't know. But I thought, you know what, this is the exact situation that he thrives in. And he didn't let us down. And what I don't understand in that two-point conversion, I don't want to be overly critical. I don't want to be, you know, armchair quarterback, but Gronk is your guy. He was fighting through all sorts of stuff out there on the sidelines, probably because of the altitude and other things, but he is the man. And when you're in that situation on the two-point conversion with the game on the line, I say toss it up to Gronk. I don't care who's covering him. He's so big. He's so strong. He's so fast. He'll go up and get it. And if he doesn't, that's fine. I'll never blame you for throwing into double coverage to give it to Gronk. He did it twice, and it paid off. I don't see why you don't do that again when you're going for the two-point conversion. What are your thoughts on that? Do you have any feelings about him deciding to go to a second look and then trying to go to Julian Edelman?
Yeah, I think he just panicked, and it was a bad throw, and Gronk was open. And it looks even worse. The reports after the game where that Edelman was limping pretty severely. So I don't think Edelman was 100% by the end of that game. I think he could probably re-injure the foot, just like, you know, Dez did. And I think Brady probably knew that. So that to know that, you got to know he's not going to be able to get open quickly there. So you just I agree. I would probably just walk in on Gronk at that point, considering nobody else on that team was contributing.
Exactly. It's how I felt about it, too. But I think a lot of it had to do with Brady. And let's give a little bit of give some props here to DeMarcus Ware, who turned back time like 5 years, and Von Miller, who really stepped up the pass rush. I mean, Brady completed only 48% of his attempted passes, which is actually the first time in postseason history that he has completion rates under 50%. And he was hit 23 times, sacked four of those times, which is almost twice as much as he's been a hit in any single regular season game this year. So that Denver defense was out for blood, and they were really getting in his face. And I think what happened was, Brady was a little shell-shocked. I mean, he got hit so many times, it's so many body blows, that at the end he get a little bit you get a little antsy, and then you end up making some poor decisions. And that's a shame, because I don't put that on Brady. I put it, as you say, I put it on the offensive line not protecting him when they should have. Although I do also say that they think that the Belichick and McDaniel should have probably tried something different on the line. You know, I know they tried putting an extra offensive lineman in there, but, you know, so you got to do something else. I mean, maybe use Gronk. I know it sounds weird, but, you know, chip somebody.
Yeah, and the real issue, Matt Chatham on Twitter, who is honestly one of the most frustrating people to follow, because I don't agree with his football standpoint very often, even though he was an ex-Patriot.
Right.
But he had an interesting video he posted in the middle of the game that I started paying attention to, and this comes back to my hate for Brian Stork right now. Brian Stork mm-hmm. was doing a distinctive head bob about a second before he hiked the ball every single time, and that's why during the game, it almost looked like Ware and Miller were offside sometimes, because they were jumping the snap every single time they got to Brady. And it was because Brian Stork decided to bring out a tell in the biggest poker game of his life. So, I think that was huge in really aiding them, because that's why Brady had no shot on some of those.
Right, right. Well, obviously the target for this offseason is fix that offensive line. And honestly, get Brady a couple more targets. Edelman was pretty good. Gronk is, beyond elite, but there really wasn't a whole lot else out there for him, and they really need to get a running back. I mean, Steven Jackson is not the answer. James White was okay, but more effective in the passing game than he was running between the tackles. I think they really do need to get a running back of some sort. And I know you don't value running backs in the league, Ryan, but I think it really does help take the pressure off of Brady, which he was feeling it this last Sunday.
Yeah, they had a pretty nice guy on the IR there with Dion Lewis, that if he had been healthy.
Yeah, no, that's true. No, he was fantastic. You're right. That could have changed the entire game. All right, so let's move off the sore topic of Brady and Manning. But you know, just so you know, all time, I believe that Manning is still behind Brady in there in head to head, 6-11. In the postseason, it's a little different, but 6-11 all time. You know, those are two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL that has ever seen. So that's really something. So let's turn to the NFC Championship game between the Arizona Cardinals and the Carolina Panthers. Now, for the late games, the Cardinals took a trip to snowy North Carolina with high hopes as only three-point dogs, but ended up being absolutely obliterated by the Carolina Panthers' defense and offense, losing 49-15, 49 being the second most points ever scored by a team in an NFC Conference Championship game ever. So tell me, what are your thoughts, takeaways on this game, which was completely lopsided between the Cardinals and the Panthers?
Oh, man. You know, I had to start with, I'm so mad at myself for flip-flopping on this. I should have trusted my gut from the beginning. And I think me and you have battled over this a couple times this season. but please, to anyone listening, go back and look up our Week 6 podcast. And I told you how freaking soft the Arizona Cardinals were. The Cardinals in that week went in to Pittsburgh and put up an embarrassing effort where they mustered 13 points in this high flying offense. And then it doesn't travel because Carson Palmer is Carson Palmer. He's a guy who's got a lot of talent, but he's weak. He's not a gamer, and I don't believe in people like him. You know, once a Bengal, always a Bengal. So, you know, he luckily got away with one against Green Bay and got to this round. But, I mean, I think Carolina is a great team. You know, I think not in the traditional sense. I don't know how they do it with the receivers they do it with. Mm. But, you know, they continue to go out there, and Cam Newton, you know, proved he deserves to be MVP of this league. But, you know, for every accolade I could say on that side, it has to come back to the embarrassing effort by the Cardinals, because that game wasn't – there was no heart in that game. And when I think of their defense, you know, I think the heart and the motor of that defense, and there's – I'm not saying he's the most skilled player on that team, but it is Tyrann Mathieu. The way he plays brings a little bit of nasty to that defense that is missing when he's not there. What Patrick Peterson is trying to do on that punt play – I believe it was in the second quarter, you know. It was a no-show game, and lucky for me, as bad as this probably was to admit on here, you know, after the Pats game, I probably was doing a little bit of Bud Light, so I didn't, you know, that game was kind of a blur for me. I had to go back and rewatch it before our podcast today because Sunday night was a rough night. But
I don't blame you.
It was embarrassing, and you know, they had no toughness anywhere. And it's just funny because it's going to come back down to the running back on both sides. Even though I'm the guy who doesn't believe in running backs, but you got to be able to run the ball between the tackles a little bit. And as much as David Johnson's a weapon in the pass game, you know, he's not a guy that can really help you grind out some yards and eat some clock and keep an offense off the field who can't stop scoring throughout the playoffs so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So, first of all, at least you had Bud Lights. You were saving on calories, so that's a big positive. David Johnson, though, you know, I have to say I am impressed with that guy. If there's one guy on the Cardinals that I was impressed with, I mean, and he didn't do anything special per se, but the fact of the matter is that no one had any output for that Cardinals team except for David Johnson. He had 15 carries for 60 yards and a touchdown. I mean, the touchdown was a so what. You know, he powered in from the 1 yard line. But honestly, 4 yards per carry against a very stiff Carolina rush defense, and then managed 9 receptions, and he caught all 9 of his targets for 68 yards. I mean, that's pretty darn good. I mean, I think he's incredibly solid, very dependable. I mean, Carson Palmer was not on target. He was absolutely miserable. I mean, 6 turnovers is that's not even. You know, I can tell you this. My worst experiences was when the Bears went to the Super Bowl led by Rex Grossman. Grossman is terrible. You know, I mean, it's terrible. It's almost like it is almost like an insult to the Super Bowl to have Rex Grossman helming a team there. So that I saw that, and that was a disgusting display. I saw Carson Palmer, and I felt better about myself. I said, you know what, Carson Palmer is absolutely disgusting today. You can't win when you have 6 turnovers. You can't win when you have 3 turnovers against this Panthers offense and his Panthers defense. And in fact, what I said in my article last week, he can't win with 2 turnovers, and he tripled that. Now, David Johnson, even getting targets that were offline, that were not near him, he managed to snag them all and make something out of them, averaging 7.6 yards per reception. He's a solid piece of that foundation. I think they can really build on him. Everybody else was terrible. Even Fitzgerald didn't really come through in the clutch. Michael Floyd was erased by Josh Norman. So that was really nothing else to talk about there in that game on the Cardinals side. But let's talk about the Panthers a little bit, because, you know, it really shocks me when you look at the box score and you look at the receivers that he has. Corey Brown with the most yards, Ted Ginn Jr., Devin Funchess, Jericho Cotchery. You know, you read that to me, I'd say, yeah, is that somebody's practice squad? It doesn't sound like a viable set of receivers. Any thoughts on that? Do you think this is for real, or do you think this is all Cam Newton?
I think in large part it's all Cam Newton. Funchess has come on the second half of the season, and I don't just say that just because I've been scouting the kid since our pre-draft last year, talking about how he's going to be a viable, very dependable wide receiver in the NFL. He doesn't have breakaway speed. He doesn't have that second gear, but he is a big-bodied kid who has the versatility
Absolutely.
To be a tight end / wide receiver, because he's got that physicality to him. So I think his emergence
started as a tight
second
end
half,
in Michigan.
Right.
Yep.
And I think his emergence in the second half has really really helped establish them a little bit more. And, you know, Ted Ginn Jr., they just send on fly routes, and for whatever reason people just decide not to cover him. I mean, most is touchdowns. You don't even see him making a move to get open. It's just like he's just running down the field and people forget he's there, and all of a sudden he's got a ball and he's taken to the house. It's unreal.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. I think it's Cam, you know, I think it is. I think they got good play calling. But I think they're on both sides of the ball. They're masking for a lot of deficiencies. They're really not good. And they're really not that great in the secondary behind Josh Norman, you know, and again, he's an elite corner, but behind him, it's a pretty mediocre, secondary. And then
totally
agree. Cam Newton's got a bunch of cast offs catching the ball. So aside from Greg Olsen,
right.
Pretty remarkable.
Which I'm
done, but I have...
so upset about the fact that the Bears traded Greg Olsen away all those years ago. It's unbelievable what a force he's become at tight end.
Well, you'd still have
really crazy.
Throwing the ball, so.
Yeah, I guess that's true. That's probably so. Greg Olsen probably would have lost his job somewhere along the way, or become a blocking tight end in Chicago. I got to mention one other guy though, Jonathan Stewart. I mean, The Daily Show he showed up. I mean, isn't it crazy to think that when Jonathan Stewart was paired with D'Angelo Williams, they both sucked, but when you divide them up, they both are great. It blows me away. I mean, like D'Angelo Williams, people wrote him off. He goes to Pittsburgh and ends up being a top 5 running back. Jonathan Stewart, I mean, for years people were hyping him, but then they said, listen, he can't do nothing. He's always injured. And here he is, one of the biggest threats on the ground in NFL. I mean, it's really amazing to me that he's able to turn it around.
I agree.
So the Panthers are now going to face Peyton Manning and the Broncos in the Super Bowl, and then we're going to preview that game next week. But tell me the one thing that you're looking forward to seeing in that matchup.
I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, if the looseness can carry over. I think this game would have been wildly more interesting if Carolina was 16-0 for obvious reasons. But the other reason is that the 07 Patriots, if you interview them or talk to them now, they'll tell you how tight they were before that game because they felt the enormity of the pressure. And I think you saw that in their loss late in the season there for Carolina. The pressure got to them a little bit. So we've seen that pressure can affect them, even though they're probably one of the loosest teams I've ever seen, with all, you know, the dabbing and the pictures on the sideline while the game's still going on, all that. But it'll be interesting to see if, you know, on a big stage, because they'll finally arrived. It doesn't get any bigger than this. And are they going to respond, or are they going to wither?
Yeah, no, that's going to be interesting. I'll say that the one thing I'm really looking forward to seeing is Cam Newton versus Von Miller, because I think people forget that Cam Newton went first, but Von Miller was second. You know, I mean, he was drafted just as highly as Cam Newton. So you look at the two of them, and now they're both, like, you know, some of the best in the league. And the way that Von Miller was coming in, I think that he'll have a harder time with Cam because Cam is so mobile. But it'll be interesting to see how those guys match up on the outside. Particularly with Cam trying to, you know, liking to scramble and move outside the pocket so much. So let's, yeah, we got to give it some shrift here. There's no football this weekend. There is the NFL Pro Bowl, which, you know, it's fine. Not the best game ever, but it can have interesting parts. But let me read you a list here, and you tell me what these guys have in common. All right. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer. What do those guys have in common in your mind?
That none of them are in the Pro Bowl.
That's right. That's right. And they're all good quarterbacks. Now let me read you this list. Jameis Winston, Derek Carr, Eli Manning, Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater. What do those guys have in common?
Well, they're all in the Pro Bowl, and most of them are the D-list quarterbacks except for Tyrod.
That's you know, and it's just shocking to me that you have a starting list of quarterbacks that's, you know, essentially highlighted by Tyrod Taylor. You know, I mean Eli Manning had a good year this year, you know, but his team did terribly. But unbelievable. Teddy Bridgewater, what is he doing there? I mean, he was barely an adequate game manager. That doesn't make any sense to me. So it just makes the Pro Bowl lose a lot of its luster when you have the best, you know, best quarterbacks in the league, all kind of chosen for it, but not going and getting replaced. I mean, every single quarterback that was chosen is not going to show for one reason or another. And all the quarterbacks that will be playing are backups, which is obscene, absolutely obscene. So about the Pro Bowl, anything about that you want to raise? Any takeaways from that? Anybody you think got snubbed? Anybody you think deserved to be on it, didn't make it, or anyone you're surprised about?
I mean, the Pro Bowl is, and the reason why it's the worst, and all the All-Star games are awful, except for the NHL this year, the 3v3 is going to be amazing. But aside from that, all the All-Star games are awful. Some of the events are cool, but the rest of it, you know, the games actually are awful. But the NFL, it is the weirdest one, and I don't get why they can't get it right. Because it's the only one that routinely has players in there. They're like, are you kidding me? Like, and let me ask you, if you really, when you think about it 15 years, 20 years down the line, and you think about Brandon Merriweather, you're going to remember all the headshots, right? But you're going to forget that the guy is a two-time Pro Bowler. I don't know how. And it was both. It was twice while he was here in New England, and he spent more time in the New England secondary taking bad angles and taking out a corner in coverage and letting the receiver run free than he did actually making a tackle. So that's my biggest point. My second biggest, and this is my biggest pet peeve with all of the All-Star games.
Yeah,
is Charles Woodson one of the best DBs in the NFL this year? No. Is Kobe Bryant one of the best players in the
Western absolutely not.
This year?
Well, Zaza Pachulia also isn't one of the best. He made the All-Star team. But go ahead.
I hate these guys on the retirement tour who get this sympathetic nod into the Pro Bowl or to the All-Star game. It cheapens the whole thing. Like, Charles Woodson, come on. You had a great career. Yeah. You'll be in Canton. You shouldn't be in Honolulu this weekend, though.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. Now, there are some people that I think that got in that I thought were very notable, very interesting. Richie Incognito, remember him, you know, with the entire bullying scandal? He made it into the Pro Bowl. I was shocked to see that. I mean, that was kind of interesting to me. The other thing I thought was interesting was Gary Barnidge making it. I actually think he earned it. He was one of the guys in the Browns that I actually liked. I thought it was kind of cool, his story, you know, being kind of a career journeyman, kind of breaking out, getting a good contract, being really, really good with really crappy quarterbacks. That's pretty nice. I like to see that.
Yeah,
that's true. But, you know, he's not Gronkowski, right? And he's not Olsen. So you can only do so much when you're not one of those guys.
That's true.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Join us again next week when we cover the Super Bowl and talk about some of the issues that are going to pop up during that great game and give you our predictions. So, Ryan, give us your Twitter account so people can follow you.
Yes, it's @RyanWhitfieldNE, and you can follow along to hopefully root on Peyton Manning with me in the Super Bowl here.
I will certainly do that because that's probably the last time we're going to see that. So, and you can follow us at FB Garbage Time on Twitter. And until next time, enjoy the Pro Bowl, and we will talk to you next week about the Super Bowl.